Love Osho podcast brings you the real stories of the people whose lives have been inspired and transformed by Osho. We explore why thousands of people are falling in love with Osho and where to find them. Take a deep breath and enjoy the show.
Hello and welcome to the Love Osho podcast. My name is Swaram and I'm the host. Today our guest is Keith Mitchell. Keith is a motivational speaker, yoga master and mindfulness coach. In his former life, Keith was a professional football player of the highest caliber. He received several accolades, including being chosen to play in the first Pro Bowl and named All-Pro player. When a severe spinal injury ended his career, he turned to his breath and the power of meditation. Thus began his path of self-awareness, personal growth and helping others to achieve the same. He has traveled all over the world, coaching people in the craft of mindfulness, the practice of yoga, the art of meditation and the importance of self-realization. Keith, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you so much for having me.
It's my absolute pleasure. You know, I'm really, really excited to have you on the show. I've come across a video on YouTube where you talk about dynamic meditation, and I really love your energy, vibration. You know, you come across as really genuine and authentic. So I checked you out. I said, who is this guy? And I realized that you've got an incredible story to tell. So I got in touch with you and you are so nice to accept the interview. So I'm really, really excited to have this opportunity to chat with you.
Definitely. I love to dive into the conversations of mindfulness, consciousness. You mentioned dynamic meditation. All those are amazing tools I love to talk about and share my opinions, my views. So definitely.
Amazing. Thank you so much. So let's start from the beginning of your spiritual journey. So today you are a meditation and yoga teacher, but it's not always been like that. You are a professional NFL football player at the top of your career. And then something happened that changed your life quite dramatically. So tell us about that. What happened?
Yeah, you know, I was in Jacksonville at that time and I was making a tackle I had made, you know, it was just part of my regimen. I was a defensive player for those who may not know sports or football. I played linebacker, which was the one who did the most hitting. And I was all over the place. In this particular game in Jacksonville playing the Buffalo Bills, making a tackle, I ended up on my back and I couldn't feel a thing. I couldn't move. I'm sitting here telling myself to get up and then my body's not responding. And so I'm there laid out 45 minutes to an hour, interrupting the game and everything is on me. And I felt the most vulnerable I had ever felt in my life. And I remember my first response is like, because being an athlete is the gladiator. So that hyper-masculine concept. And I was like, get me out of here. This is embarrassing. You know, really not thinking about the predicament that I was in. I was later diagnosed with a spinal contusion. I wasn't able to really gain mobility really for over about a month. And through the process, I learned conscious breathing. And through conscious breathing, began to really just change my whole life, my whole perspective, the whole evolution of who I thought I was to who I am growing into today. So now through the concept, just to be a little bit brief, sorry if I'm going too long, the idea is the growth and development of the human with the capacity to teach a mindfulness or meditation or yoga, but also have the capacity to do all other things. These things do not define me. So through that learning curve with conscious breathing, I was able to venture off into that understanding and gain that knowledge.
So you were laying flat with a serious injury. Potentially, you were at risk of being paralyzed for all your life. At that point, you didn't know if you could make it or not. And then I personally think that conscious breathing is the last resort where, you know, I could think I can recover with conscious breathing in such condition. Did you know at that time that conscious breathing was actually a meditation technique that has been practiced by Buddhist monks for ages and ages? Or how was it presented to you?
Well, I had no idea of, you know, the whole concept. In fact, I was blown away. And granted, for the listeners, I didn't learn conscious breathing on the field. I did not learn on the field. I learned it in the hospital. and a nurse, she mentioned it to me, and she told me, she asked me the question, and this is why I'm really into how I teach meditation, is through proposing the question. And when the question comes up, answering it. And she told me, do you know what happens when you breathe? And I had been an athlete my whole life, and I had never conceptualized what happens when I breathe. I never asked the question, what happens when I breathe? So I was like, why do I not know this? And interesting enough, she began to share the knowledge, her wisdom of what happens when you breathe. And for those who are curious, on the inhale, the diaphragm pushes down. On the exhale, it pushes up. So we take about, on average, about 10,000 breaths a day. So the body is going through this massaging process. And through this process, you're also sedated. You're also relaxed. It puts you in the more intentional way of being. It's a process mechanism. When you break down the internal organs, the liver is anger, kidney is fear, the gut is worry, the intestines is worry. So when we realize all the dis-ease happens first on the emotional basis, now when I'm breathing this way, now I have the consequences of that is more peace, is more zen, is more presence. And so for me, through that experience, it gave me the one vital tool that I needed, and it's to realize that I could participate in my own healing. And when I realized I could participate in my own healing, I wasn't the victim anymore.
Okay, so basically you didn't know much about meditation, Buddhist monks.
No.
But you experienced firsthand what conscious breathing can do, and you were hooked. You know, that a new dimension kind of opened up for you. So where did you go from there? Did you say, you know, I want to go deeper, I want to learn everything about that? Did you read books? Did you meet people? Did you go look for a teacher, or you just went for 10,000 hours practice? You know, tell us from that moment onwards.
Well, it's interesting. In my book, I have this chapter called Making Your Life Your Practice. And through the duration of picking up that tool, my life, just because I learned conscious breathing, wasn't just mysteriously just perfect right away. I went through the natural trials and errors of picking up a tool and implementing it into my life. You know, I always tell people living is a process. You know, to be present is a process. The whole natural idea of being more mindfulness or mindful is a process. So in this experience, I had no choice. I had and time was an essence. It's like I had an urgency because I was on the clock of whether or not my body was going to come back online or not. And so, which is so interesting, because sometimes in life we get proposed a new idea and we're like, well, let me do this. Let me check it out. We kind of deflect it. But in this case, I was open. And this is why we talk about the posture in yoga, Shavasana, in this posture of being open. Well, it allows the information to come. It allows us to be receptive to the information to come in and to take it in. So that dynamic alone changed my life.
Is there anyone that inspires you spiritually, in the spiritual dimension? Is there like a teacher, someone you look up to?
Well, later on, as I began to build this thirst for knowledge, for information, I began to learn and journey from amazing teachers like, you know, actually one book that really changed my life, it may have been the first book I really ever really read complete, and it was The Art of Loving by Eric Fromm. And from The Art of Loving by Eric Fromm, it introduced me to Jay Krishnamurti. And then from Jay Krishnamurti, introduced me to Osho. And really interesting, amazing teachers and thought provokers, you know, like that. So it just put me on this, some people call it a rabbit hole. I call it just the thirst for wisdom and information to know more. I mean, I think when we spark that curiosity, it opens us up to the world.
In terms of Osho, so you mentioned Osho, and obviously we are all about Osho.
yes.
So what did you find in Osho that really is intriguing for you? What's in Osho for you?
Well, interesting about Osho is, you know, again, coming from the sport lineage, you have coaches, right? And coaches are profound. And how we rate coaches is the players that they coach, the successes of the players that they coach. And what I found when I saw and heard of Osho, I was like, wow, there's so many amazing teachers that come out of that lineage. So how and what is he saying, or what did he do to create this dynamic? What you'll find is a lot of teachers, their students never gain the, it's not that we're looking for the notoriety, but for the heights in which they go and live and do miraculous things are kind of limited because they're the teacher and they keep everyone below them. But Osho had a plethora of so many amazing people all over the world. I was like, man, I want to know who he is. I want to understand what did he do, his message. And it put me on an amazing quest to pick up many of his books. And like we're going to go into here now is it led me to the Himalayas to go to Tapabon to experience what it's like to be in an ashram and under Osho, his lineage. Yeah.
Okay, amazing. And I want to hear about your experience in a minute, about your direct experience of doing the practice of the techniques of Osho. But just to stay on that, you mentioned something very important, which is very dear to me, that Osho attracted a lot of intelligent, educated people who went then to teach on their own. You know, they're like kind of thought leaders, influencers in many different fields, particularly in the field of therapy. You know, the human potential movement has been transformed during Osho's time and afterwards. But at the same time, Osho is very controversial, as I'm sure you're aware of. And I'm wondering, when you talk to, you know, friends and, you know, people in general, and you mention about spiritual teachers, does Osho come up in conversation, or is somehow non-acknowledged for his contribution?
You know, certain places don't know who Osho is. And then the most interesting places I find someone speak on and quote Osho. There was a guy, I can't remember the story in detail, but something to the extent a guy who was incarcerated got a book of Osho. He's a young kid, probably in his 20s. And however, for whatever reason, he was in this article, he was quoting Osho, you know? It's like, you know, when I hear about controversial things or ideas, those are the places I want to go. I want to know, because it's like the resistance in the body when you're doing a yoga. Those are the places, when you feel that resistance, that's where you need to go. Because that's telling you the tale of like where the goodness is and potentially can be. So, yeah, I find that when I go and bring up the Osho's name and the conversations around his philosophy, and that he's still talked about and considered, his philosophy is still relevant to this day. I mean, hands down, you got to respect and say, what did he do and how did he have this thought so far ahead of his time?
Amazing. Now, I love what you said about the controversial aspect, and it's actually what attracts lots of people. You know, the people who are attracted to Osho are normally independent thinkers, rebel, people who really want to go beyond the conventional story, and the really seekers, you know, the true seekers and rebels. So, and you've got that, you know, that's why I really like, you know, you've got this spark, you know, this aliveness in your eyes. So that's why I love it. Let's talk about your experience with the meditation. So you came across Osho, you read the books, you said, oh, I really want to find out more and have a firsthand experience. So tell us about that.
So I didn't know anything about dynamic meditation. I didn't know about all the various meditations until I got that book. It's a book that Osho has all the meditations in there. It's like a tremendous amount of numbers of meditation. And by being at Tapabon, first I must say, being in Tapabon, that ashram life for me was an adjustment. It was like one of the, I always tell people that was one of the most challenging things I did. And I wasn't knowing that that's what I needed, but I needed it. I thought, okay, I know how to sit. I know how to be uncomfortable. But then I put myself in a whole nother space. And I'm saying Tapabon is an amazing place, ashram, you know, but we were meditating 8 hours a day. It was like, I'm eating a regimen of dal, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. This dynamic is like a whole different dynamic for me. But it's like, I'm like forcing myself to sit with it and be with it. And through the process, because, you know, I came in, I'm like, I'm just going to be quiet. I'm not going to talk. I'm just going to do my thing and focus there. But then as I began to unveil and these things began to, you know, unfold within me, I began to engage with people. And then the dynamic meditation, being blindfolded. And I'm like, what is this? And screaming but going into it and not really judging it and just being with it and like, oh, I'm going to try this and see the results of it. Oh, it changed my life. It put me in a whole different mindset when you even think of meditation, because we get so linear here. Maybe it's the West, but we get so linear, like it has to be this way and that way. But a lot of times that stillness is not available for everyone. Sometimes we must come through the chaos to find stillness. And that was the biggest understanding for me, not only for myself and how I could share it with others.
I love it. So you ended up in the Osho community without knowing anything about dynamic meditation, and can be quite shocking. I can imagine doing that with a lot of people, and especially if you were used to more passive traditional techniques like, you know, mindfulness and conscious breathing. So,
and then hold on, one more thing, the laughing meditation. And then I'm walking up and down the steps. I don't know if you've been a top of bar, I'm sure you have. But the steps, and you're walking down, and the monkeys, and they're like, you know, trying to steal your food. And then you hear the other people in their sessions, and you got people crying one moment, and then they're laughing. I'm like, what is going on? You know, it's like all this dynamic, all this energy, all this like people on this path, you know, together was just, I'm like, this is how else would you want to live? You know, that was another interpretation I got from just the community aspect and how vital in our development, how important it is for our development as humans to be nurtured in that capacity as well. I think that's the most, and I think that's what Osho really saw. He saw we were in an environment that was not developing humans completely. It was just creating a big cesspool of traumatic experiences that no one was teaching us how to release, and it was affecting our growth and development as humans. I just had to say that part. Yeah.
Well, I love it. You know, it's actually exactly what it was. You know, Osho created an experiment, a human laboratory for helping people develop in all directions. It was so multidimensional, and he used also sorts of different tools from dynamic meditation and so many other different techniques and therapy. He was the first to include therapeutic approaches integrated with meditation, which is one of the biggest contributions of Osho.
Yes.
So, you now teach meditation and yoga. Have you ever considered to kind of share dynamic meditation? Have you ever had a chance to share it as a tool?
Of course. You know, I was in, right after I left Tapaban, I did a teaching in Hong Kong. And, you know, that was one of the places where a lot of people have a lot of conditionings of old traditions and ways of being very conservative. I'm like, what, you know, and I had the best story that was on the top of my head because I just left, you know, Nepal. And I was like, hey, listen, I have this meditation I would love to share with you. And I gave him the basic understanding of it. It's a little different than the typical meditation. And then, you know, I went through the whole spectrum of it, and they were like, okay, we want to do it. And I had all the music, and I had it all together, and I knew it. And so I went through the whole practice with everyone there, and they loved it. It's like, it goes to the concept of you don't know what you don't know. You know, we find ourselves limiting ourselves to the experiences, the new experiences. And when we can be open to allow new interpretations, new understandings to come in, it allows expansiveness to our growth, our development. So what a perfect place to do it in Hong Kong. And they loved it. Yeah.
Amazing. Oh, that's great. I mean, it's not easy. You're very bold, I have to say, because I lived in Singapore for a couple of years. So obviously Singapore and Hong Kong are different, but Everywhere I go, I try to share what I know works. So I shared a dynamic meditation there, and I found it quite challenging for the average Singaporean person. Didn't go very well, you know, first time in my life. You know, I used to live in London, and there it's completely like open-minded, and they loved it. But Singapore was not exactly the same.
Yeah. Well, you know, in this walk of life, as you know, and I know you are, because, you know, this whole, you know, like Osho says, everything that we're teaching is rebellious. It's a disrupting mechanism. So to step into that truth and speak it, well, that's the revolution in itself. So you have to be bold in that. So what other place or better place than Hong Kong to start? So, and if we can do it in Hong Kong, you can do it in Singapore, we can do it anywhere.
I love your optimism, you know, positivity. Absolutely.
Yes. Yes.
Talking about meditation a little bit broader, before in the West, in the Western world, meditation used to be very niche, you know, just for the alternative crowd, let's call it this way. Whereas nowadays, meditation has gone mainstream. You know, there are corporate CEOs of big companies doing meditation, promoting and advocating meditation, military. It's in professional sports, even politicians. I heard that you led a yoga meditation class at the White House, and that's really amazing.
Yeah.
So how do you go introducing something like meditation in the West, where still today some people might be skeptical and reluctant because they feel is something to do with religion?
Well, you know, I keep it in a sense of... you know, a lot of people want to claim logic. So I put it in the realm of the contemplative aspect. And so my formula through my influence and how I share it is you propose the question, and the question I want to be challenging to you, you know, like say, for instance, like name three things that you feel are holding you back. And then we identify the one that you want to focus on right now. And when you answer that question, now you also ask the question, why do I allow myself to be held back by this thing? And then through your answer, you sit in silence and you observe whether you spoke yourself to yourself the truth. That's the basic formula of finding yourself into a meditation. So you're surrendering to the fact that whether you spoke the truth to yourself or you lied to yourself. And then what is that about? So I want to build the curiosity, right? I want to, like Osho says, bring heaven to earth in a sense, but I want to go in the way that you know to go. And if you're logical, if you're in the cerebral space, well, then let's go there. We'll start there. And then, but the idea is to get into the body ultimately. And then we get back into the cerebral. And when the cerebral and the mindset is together, now we all go in that one direction. And it's pretty profound. And in those places where like you have the politicians or the highly successful business people, I've known it to be effective because people want to find themselves intelligent, you know? So we go into their minds.
I love it. And that's, I think, what Osho did. You know, he was so intelligent and so logical in the way he spoke about all sorts of different subjects that attracted the people who are also not naturally attracted to meditation and spirituality.
Yes.
You're kind of going that through. Yeah, because lots of people are very logical, rational in the West. So you have to get through that to get there. Okay. Yeah. Well,
and it's a yin and a yang, and it's realizing it, and it's all okay, and we create the container, the space, and it unfolds, and you see amazing breakthroughs, and as you know, and I'm sure you see, and this is what keeps us, you, I'm sure, motivated, inspired to keep doing it, because it's also a continuation for my own healing, and it just so happens to help other people, so it's pretty amazing. I feel this is what we're here for.
Do you think, for you, in your experience and in your view, that meditation can be extrapolated from a spiritual context and just presented as a tool and has benefits? You know, even science now is proving that there are lots of health benefits attached to the practice of just conscious breathing, or it has to be part of a spiritual context and tradition? What's your take on that?
Well, it's just like, say, when my chapter in my book is, my first chapter is define your words. So what is spirituality? What is not spirituality? So if we want to give spirituality a definition, it's a science unseen. And science is just seeing spirituality. And let's start from there. So I'm bringing it to your cerebral, bringing it to your headspace to where you can compute it. And then we go from there. So we build from a foundation of understanding. And even if you don't agree, but it's an agreement that we come to a conclusion with, this is your idea with love. Well, this is my idea with love, right? And let's see how we can build. But typically how, when we come together, we hold an idea that we have, you hold an idea you have, and we never talk about that. But then we have the idea that we can build together. And that doesn't have a logical foundation. It's not logical at all. So in the reality of this, it's just applying it in a simple form, because in all aspects of how we engage with one another, we're building, we're intimate, we're relating. And so we build, really how I see meditation is a bridge to help us troubleshoot, to solve problems. And also put it in that perspective as well. We're creating our reality. And this is a formula for how we're doing it.
It's a very, very practical approach, basically.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. You mentioned a book, so maybe let's not forget and talk about your book. You put all these ideas that things we're discussing now into a book, which is about to be released. Is already out.
It's about to be released. It's on my. Some people can pre-order it. It's on keithmitchell59.com. And the book is The Mindfulness Playbook. And it's 8 strategies for winning at the game of life. And winning is all predicated to what you're desiring. You know, I'm the meditation teacher that will say, I want you to think, right? I want you to think. However, I don't want you to think past thoughts. I don't want you to think and hold the negative thoughts. I want you to invest into thought. I want you to challenge your thought and contemplate that. Right. So that's the difference. And also when we realize a destination or desire, in the past, the old paradigm has told us that we couldn't desire. However, when we were building, when we were creating with our ideas, we have to recognize that at the end of the day, this is what's happening. It's taking us to a place. Now it's important for us to guide where we want to go. If it's love, if we want the consequence to be peace, well, then if that's truly what we mean, then we need to align our actions to our thoughts. So it's putting that in a perspective so it can be something that's tangible for us. And when we go through life and life brings about happenings and we have these defaults, we can have something that grounds us so we can sustain our mission, sustain our course.
One thing I also want to discuss with you is business and how to make money in this life. I don't know if you work with people on that aspect as well, or this topic is part of your book and your approach, but what I've noticed is people who are normally spiritually oriented, they kind of find it quite challenging to be in the world, especially in business. You know, they're kind of, it's tough, you know, can be tough. So you, in your experience, you were a professional football player and then you turn your life upside down and now you're essentially an entrepreneur. You're a businessman. I mean, you're making it on your own. What would be your advice for people who want to do business but also do something positive? To be authentic, to be spiritually open and just say, you know, I'm a spiritual person. I want to do something positive in the world, but also I need to make money. What's your approach with that?
Well, my approach to that is kind of is simple, but I guess it is a little bit complex. But here's a go at it. Life has no meaning. We give meaning to life. And the more you can speak the truth to yourself, the more you can find your truth, then you realize how vital you are to the completion of our society, meaning you are the medicine. and your life experiences, you have the PhD, you're certified to speak. So the reality is, if you've had the addiction and you come to grips with your the addiction that you've had, well, then you begin to be the greatest addiction teacher. I've been through the trauma. Well, when I realized the trauma and how I did it to the extent of it, well, then I began to be the speaker of trauma. We're all to shed light on the experiences that nobody seems to want to be open, to be vulnerable, to extend to the world. But as you know, so many of us are in the corner thinking that I'm the only one. I'm the only one that's been through this. And when you are able to be transparent to show where you've been, now you shed light on millions of people, so many people, and you create space for them to come and open up and say, wow, you did this? Well, then I can do it too. And I think that's where I suggest people go who want to be a teacher, because I just left a teacher training in Nebraska. I was helping lead it, in a sense. They brought me in for a couple of days. So the first question is, why do you want to be a teacher? You know, because we realize when we teach to where we've been, and the reason why we teach is not only because we can make money, but because it's a continuation to my own healing. It keeps me on course. It's the medicine.
Yeah.
That's human connectivity. Yeah.
Yeah. And you are definitely an inspiration and a great example. Your life was 100% focused on performing and being the tough guy. You know, football, American football is probably one of the most violent and ruthless sports you can find. And now you are a meditation teacher and you're so like open, and you're not scared to talk about your vulnerability. And as a alpha male man, I think it's a great example.
Yeah, and I feel that that's the expansiveness that we can go in this world. It's really building a maturity around masculinity, and even for women to build the maturity around femininity. You know, we haven't taken and pushing these concepts to limits. It's like we have a stunted emotional growth. Again, back to the development of the human, these things have not really unveiled. We don't even have a vocabulary to express ourselves. So when you think of the emotion of anger, well, anger comes up when we don't know what else to do. So we go through a temper tantrum, like when we were 3 or 4 years old. So when I go into breathing and breathing deeply from the belly, the diaphragm breathing, I realize it begins to slow everything down. I get to process it before I respond. So now I'm more intentional. When I have a shallow breath, I'm reactive, fight or flight. So it's building emotional maturity, which is a development for me to realize how I can navigate more efficiently. It's pretty cool.
It's cool. Absolutely. So, Keith, looking at the lifestyle in general, you know, in addition to yoga and meditation, what other changes have happened in your life in terms of, you know, how you eat, how you go about your relationships? You know, we talked about business, but, you know, your day-to-day life, is there anything else that goes together with meditation?
Yeah, you know, eating, it contributes to how we heal. It contributes to our levels of consciousness, our development even. And, you know, this is why I've been vegan for 7, almost 8 years now. You know, I never thought I would be vegan. You know, when I made that transition, it was about healing. And when you have an understanding of how your body functions, well, then you know how to fuel it. You know what it needs to function. And I think, again, it goes back to the curiosity that we typically don't have. We never question to ask, what does my body need? We never ask, well, why am I doing this? You know? And so when you get the response, you can realize you're not the victim, it's on you. And when I know, I can do better. And not knowing from the standpoint, because a lot of times this happens as well, we build the library in our minds, you know, and we feel that knowledge is power. No, knowledge is when it's applied, it's power. So when I do better, when I do things different, when I have different interactions with people, now I have power. Now I have an understanding. Now I have consciousness. Consciousness, it just simply means awareness. Awareness equates, in my opinion, to compassion, which is the highest form. I think Osho says it's the highest form of love. And this is why I say the greatest disruption that we can have is how we treat one another, starting with ourselves. And like, you know, I saw something that Osho said, which is interesting too. Now looking at where we are in the world, we may be the last, people that can rebel, to be able to revolt. And the very interesting thing is, the revolution is in our minds. The revolution is in how we navigate the world, how we interact with one another. Because if we don't participate in capitalism, meaning if we're not led by, they're saying that we have to buy this to look fashionable, they're saying we have to buy this to look a certain way, we realize that we make the clothes, we make it popular, we make it interesting to wear. When we understand that it's all about us in this sense, we change the whole game. And it's just having that awakening gets me excited, man. And I'm like, geez, let's go. You know, it makes me wake up in the morning excited, like, wow, it's just that small tweaking of understanding and how we can really thrive the way as humans we have a right to.
So when you work with people, do you just... You know, I feel all of this passion and fire, and you're really inspired. You know, you got this concept from Osho of being a rebel, which obviously doesn't mean going on the street and protest. Might be include that if someone wants to, but it has to do more, as you said, with the inner and the way you look at the world, the way you relate with others, and realizing that you're not a victim of society, capitalism, political systems, but you can make a difference.
Yes.
Taking that responsibility. Do you kind of work with people to bring them to this awareness, or it's like, you know, because maybe people just come to you because they want to learn about yoga, the posture and conscious breathing, but behind that, there is a lot more.
Of course, because again, we don't know what we don't know. And when you propose the question, like I said, I'd left this training, like, who do you say that you are? If you have an idea of transformation, well, what are you transforming? And then a lot of these words that we use, I'm a mother, I'm a father, well, to the extent that you've seen a mother and father is the extent that you can be a mother and father. Now, what's the new paradigm look like? Do you want to be what you've seen, or do you want to create something new? And if I were to go on a limb, I would say you're here because you want to create something new. So let's build and let's create that. You know, so it's a simple formula, but I feel people can relate to it and quickly. And it's logically, it allows them to make the simple adjustments. It's just simple adjustments. And it's so interesting when I talk about that, it's like I've seen in the sport world, I saw so many players who were average one moment, and then a coach comes to them and make a suggestion. You should do something like this different. And then it takes them from average to all world as a player. But what does that look like when it comes to us humans? When you talk about the potentiality of a human, and when you talk about focusing on the human showing up like greater than they showed up the day before and making that an emphasis, what does our world look like? What does your, and the world is not necessarily the greater system, but it's like the world in which you live in, your love life, your relationship with your kids, your community, those begin to ripple off and that begin to expand a whole nother awareness, because we are the medicine to give light and shed light for other people to say, hey, that person did that. Well, then I can do it too.
You are playing an active role, you know, in promoting meditation, yoga, but this vision, this more awareness, development of awareness and taking responsibilities. As we mentioned before, you even managed to lead the meditation session at the White House. So yes. I think it's a combination of course, that you have a great story. You are like a celebrity NFL football player. But at the same time, I think you do have something on your own right. You know, you have a sparkle. You know, you touch something inside of you that is kind of contagious. So what are your latest projects? You know, you seem so inspired and you are influential. You know, you reach out to people. So what are you up to? What do you want to do more?
Well, before I go into that, because a lot of people can say that you're this and you're that. However, I feel that you're this and you're that. And when you realize that, now you have that same power. And depending on, it could be the greatest power, it could be the power, again, in your community. But however, here's a kicker. When we understand, we know each other, now we have a network of power. So that then times 10's your power. See, we have this collective understanding. It's like the idea of to go fast, I go alone. To go far, we go together. And this is the community approach that I see, not just in an ashram, but in the world. And this is what, in my opinion, we must start tapping into, because as a collective, we can be dynamic individually, but as a collective, we change big things, like huge things. You know, we create that. You know, so that's what I'm excited about. And what we're learning also is through the technology. Like, we're connected. You're in Greece. I'm in LA. So we have this relationship now. And now we can, so now I turn and expedite your power in LA, and then you help me get to Greece. It's like, this is a whole dynamic of dance that we do that's spreading really positivity and transformation. So I just wanted to share that piece. Now, what I have coming up, I work with a lot of tech companies. And so my thing is making, because so many people, like you mentioned earlier, have a stigma around meditation and the spiritual and all this, and yoga even. So we changed the name. I'm not attached to the name. So we call it mindfulness, you know? And so they're receptive to mindfulness. So we put mindfulness there, realizing that it's still a yoga, it's still a meditation, it's still what transformed our own lives. So we give it to them in a different shiny box, a box that they can receive. So I'm doing that with a lot of tech companies. We have an app coming out. And really what I want to do is showcase the components and have various teachers who are on this platform to teach their unique messages as well. Nutrition is a big part of my development. So I'm also sharing things with nutrition that's coming out. And the book, like I said, the Mindfulness Playbook is coming, and some really cool projects. It's just like, you know, manifestation. Like, those who are listening, I want you to really dive into and really put a focus on manifesting, because we have so much energy that we haven't tapped into when you talk about creation. You know, money is an energy, and it's not a focal point, but it's an energy. And as we manifest things and we manifest abundance, well, it can come along with it. And it's a brilliance that I feel that we, even as we transform into wanting to lead from the heart and being from the heart, because we see our healing, is something that we need to think about in strategizing how we want to, again, bring heaven to earth.
I love it. I really love it. And I can feel your enthusiasm, and you are making things happen, you know, because lots of people have the same passion, but somehow they get lost a little bit. Whereas you are doing it, you know, you're making it happen on a big scale. I love this project with the app, and I believe you're talking about corporate wellness, introducing lifestyle interventions and meditation in the corporate world, which is a growing area. And that's, I think, where we really need to go, because, you know, that if the corporate change, especially the leaders, and cascading to all the employees, that's how we can change the world. Because, you know, most of the people are there in those corporate offices.
yes, so true, so true. So we have to go into those places and extend it. And again, not be attached to a word, an idea. It really, in my opinion, helps the teacher elevate and expand the way that they present. You know, and if my message is esoteric and I got that, okay, great. But now, how can I translate this esoteric message to the matrix, the people who are not familiar? So now it puts another challenge on the teacher to expand and grow as a teacher. And I think that's why we teach, not just to be finite, but to be expansive. So let's go.
Yeah, let's go. I mean, I really like this. This change of perspective, you know, it's a challenge on the teacher to find a way to communicate with people, even if you have an esoteric message, but you can't openly go like that, then you find a way. You put, in your case, mindfulness box. It works fine. You enter, and then through your energy and through your eyes, you make the change. You know, like
yes.
I love it. I love it. So excited! It's so amazing. So we are heading towards the end. I've got three final questions for you. Before that, okay. Is there anything else you would like to add?
No, that's it. That's it.
Okay. So the first question is, what's your morning routine? How does your morning look like in the first couple of hours of your day?
Oh, well, typically I drink water. I drink about 32 ounces of water. We need to hydrate. The biggest two reasons of sickness on the planet is dehydration and sleep deprivation. So I drink water. I drink about a gallon of water a day. For you, it could be your weight divided by 2. In ounces of how much water you should drink a day. And then typically I start with a yoga, different various postures. I focus typically on my back in the morning just to keep it open, to move blood flow around. And then I sit and meditate for, you know, depending on how long I have. Even if you don't go into a straight meditation, I see yoga as being, for me, a meditation with movement. It's like a moving meditation. So it's all predicated to how you create it, but that's how I do it. And I start my day that way.
Amazing. Okay, so the second question is, what's your favorite meditation?
My favorite meditation? Ooh, geez. Okay, since we're adults here, I'm going to go into Tantra, the Yab Yum meditation. Yeah, the Yab Yum meditation. I also, you know, obviously Osho Tantra teacher as well. The Yab Yum, whenever you get to connect and have that connectivity, and that, you know, the human, I feel human to human is the highest form of nourishment on the planet. And when you can connect that way and with your significant other or however you have it set up, it's pretty profound. So that would be my favorite meditation.
Wow. Yes. So that is a man.
Yes. Well, I mean, it's a part of the deal. It's like all that goodness over there, you're going to stay away from it? Come on, we're human. It's like, we're, you know, so yeah.
Amazing. Enjoy. Okay. So the last question is, what are your top three tips for a healthy and mindful life?
I would say intermittent fasting is something that I would say it'd be something that you should consider. And the reason being is because in our healing and our development, a part of it is because when you think of your blood, your blood flow, your breath, it's the prana, it's the chi, and when it's constantly in your gut to process foods that you can sometimes, depending on your diet, break down. In a lot of cases, you can't when it, so when you eat conducive to your body, well, now instead of having the 3-hour, how they say it takes 3 hours to process your food, well, instead of having 3 hours to process your food, well, then you gain 3 hours to heal and develop by eating foods that assimilate to your body. So when you have a regimen of that, now I believe it's 85% of my blood goes to my gut when I'm processing foods. Well, now I got 85% of my blood going into my human growth and development, you know? So now I'm working with my body to evolve, to help the transformational process and getting out of the way of not knowing, but knowing how and what my body needs. So it's a whole game changer when you talk about nutrition and how we can eat our way into healthier, more conscious ways of living. It's pretty profound.
I'm very passionate about nutrition myself. I've done different experiments and I do the intermittent fasting. I normally do 16, 18 hours. And it's absolutely a life-changing strategy. Mm-hmm. Totally yes. Agree with you. But with the vegan diet, I'd love to learn more about you and how your vegan diet look like. Maybe we can have a off-camera discussion or have a whole new episode on that because it's a big topic. I don't want to take too much of your time. You know, we're kind of
CMOS. Let me tell you, CMOS is a really huge component to my diet. CMOS.
Is it like an algae?
It comes from the ocean. It has 92 minerals and it assimilates to your body, meaning it has what you have. So when you eat it, the processing mechanism is instantaneously. It just collides. It connects. And so calcium, so it has the greatest levels of calcium, magnesium. Magnesium is for brain health. You know, when you talk about a depressed state, a depressed population, it's because they're lacking in a lot of cases of magnesium. Because again, we can fuel our development. We can fuel our transformation. So, and then calcium. Calcium is not just bones. It's also skin, not just the external skin, but also the internal skin. So when you talk about liver, kidneys, your intestines, your internal organs, now you can begin to redevelop, restructure those internal organs, you know, profound.
Really into it. You're really passionate about nutrition.
Yes.
So that's great. So
those are the things to really go into. So we got manifestation and CMOS. How do we do that? and Tantra,
right. Yes. I didn't expect that. That's a twist at the end. So Keith, you know, it's been really amazing chatting with you. I really love your inspiration, your passion, you know, and what you're doing. You know, you're talking, you're walking the path. You're doing an amazing job for the world, for spreading this, not just the techniques of mindfulness and yoga, but, you know, this vision of being rebel and really finding our own voice within and being more healthy, more conscious, more aware. And I see a lot of Osho's influence on you. So it's beautiful.
Thank you. Thank you.
Love you. Thank you so much. Lots of love.
Lots of love. We'll see you.
Bye.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it and leave a review. Visit loveosho.com for more episodes, blogs, or to connect with us.